You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Helm, report.
Sir, there's Klingons on the starboard bow.
Starboard bow?
Starboard bow!
What are they doing there?
They seem to be waiting for the new episode of Earth Station Trek.
Science, what do we know about this Earth Station Trek?
It's a podcast that treks through the history of Star Trek, from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between.
Navigation, how would one find such a podcast?
By setting coordinates for earthstationtrek.com or by doing a sensor sweep of Spotify, iTunes, or any other quadrant where fine podcasts are available.
Captain, what are we going to do about the Klingons?
We come in peace, Commander. Weapon station, shoot to kill.
Shoot to kill?
Shoot to kill.
Hey, everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Monster Attack, the podcast dedicated to old monster movies. And this is our third holiday episode. Yeah, and I just want to mention, just how much fun it's been this year to really concentrate the entire month of December on the holiday season. This is something we haven't done in the past. Now, previous years, Madeline or Mark and I had done some special shows, one or two special shows for the holiday season. But this year, we decided to go all out. We had a Halloween-oriented show, and then one starting right after Thanksgiving, we started getting into some more special shows. But December, we let it all loose, and we have got a very, very, very special movie to talk about with you this week for the holidays. Now, as many of you know, this is being released on Christmas Day. So I wanted something that not only suggested to me Christmas time when I was a kid growing up, but something that would, a movie that was just indelibly marked in my brain all of those years. And when I think back on my childhood, this is a movie I was exposed to very, very early in my childhood. I can't think of any other movie other than 1939's immortal classic, The Wizard of Oz. And I know folks at least my age or around my age have come to love this film just as much as I do. Now, what's going to be interesting here is, the younger audience that listens to Monster Attack here, I'm not sure how much this movie has affected them. But maybe you'll get an understanding of some of the things I've talked about here on Monster Attack, how movies, especially monster movies for a lot of us my age growing up, we saw on television with commercials, the whole nine yards. There was no cable TV. And if we wanted to see a movie without commercials, we had to see it in a movie theater. And, of course, there were the Saturday afternoon matinees that I would attend as a kid that would have some monster movies and that sort of thing. But, now it's just so much easier to see monster movies and films of the fantastical. Now, technically, this movie doesn't have monster. We've got a Wicked Witch. And I'm going to make an assumption here that most of you listening to this podcast this week know the story of The Wizard of Oz. I mean, we'll talk about the timeline a little bit as I think back. There are just such wonderful emotions that I have experienced because of this film. Now, for many, many years, I was under the impression that when this film was released in 1939, it was a total bust. And that rumor went around for many, many years, and I'm not really sure where it started. But I wanted to look into that, especially for this episode of the podcast. Because it was hard for me to believe that this film would have been a total bomb when it came out in 1939. This was one my mother loved. And she really, really was excited when it came out every year, just like I was. And we're going to talk just a little bit about how that comes about in just a second here. But the truth of the matter is that this film did very well. And it did very, very well in the European releases in 1939. It made money here in the United States, But it may be true that maybe it didn't make as much money as people thought it should have made. And if it wasn't for television, I think television actually launched this this movie into the stratosphere, into the super stratosphere of legendary films. I think eventually it always would have been considered a legend, and of course it's on BFI's top 100 movies. It's received all kinds of accolades over the years. It's been released in every form imaginable: VHS, DVD, Blu-ray. I'm sure there's going to be a 4K version. There may already be a 4K version of it out there. I know the one I saw just the other night to do the podcast, because my VHS version got destroyed in the tornado that I talk about all the time, and I never did replace it with a DVD. But so I'm watching it streaming now, and I get it through HBO Max through their TCM, Turner Classic Movies connection, and it's a wonderfully restored movie, just incredibly restored. There is just so much that I think positively about this movie. So this one's going to be another one of those, more emotional than technical type podcasts, because I think that's what this movie is to a lot of people, especially people that grew up around the same time I did. The movie made its release in 1939. I think it did get a re-release in the theaters a few years later, but it started its television release in 1956, and it was released... It had releases on NBC and CBS, and then later CBS got the full rights to the film for its television broadcast. And the first time I saw this movie on TV was in 1959. Now, it had had the 1956 TV release, had a couple of television broadcasts, got one on each of those networks, and then CBS got the rights, and then 3 years later, they brought it back to TV. And that's when it got established as an annual event. And when I say event, I'm saying event with a capital E. There's no way that I put this into the level of hyperbole. This film, for kids my age growing up during this time period, was an event we all looked forward to. The kids I went to school with, we waited for The Wizard of Oz to come on CBS. It would always come on a Sunday night. I think initially it came on at 7 o'clock. It would run for 2 hours, 7 to 9, and then we'd have to wait another year before we could see it again. That's how television was back then. And that's why I mentioned what I did early on. This really has a lot to do with the way we were affected by monster movies and movies of all types that we loved. You just couldn't, dial up on demand. That would come many, 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 many years later. And I can remember when the VHS came out of this film, how excited people were to get an actual copy of this film that they could watch anytime they wanted to on their own. I gave a copy of this to my sister because she was a huge Wizard of Oz fan, just like I was. She and I, we couldn't wait for this show to come on every year. Now, my youngest sister, I think, got sort of brought into the fold with it. Now, my youngest sister was 8 years younger than me. So, by the time she was really getting into Wizard of Oz, I was, getting ready to go to college and all of that. But my younger sister, Susan, and I, we just loved when this film came on. Now, it was many, many years that I only saw this film in black and white. As I've said many times, we didn't get our first color TV until 1969. By then I was already in, junior high school. So the fact that this film made such an impact on me, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the color and the black and white scenario, but just in a few minutes, because I want to get back more into when this film made its appearance on television. And again, CBS established this as an annual event. The film was always shown during that time period between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And that's why it has such a permanent impact on me. Even today, I watched this film about a week ago, and I still had some heavyweight emotions that were rumbling up inside of me watching it. It just brought back a total rush of memories, and of good memories. I've never had a bad memory or a bad experience watching this movie. Never. Because as the years unfolded, from 1959, and at that time I was 5 years old when I watched the movie for the first time. It was in December, the first week of December. And generally it was the first week in December when CBS would show this. It was almost exactly halfway between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Now, as a kid growing up, there were some pivotal times during the year that I always lived for. You know, and you know how we were as kids growing up. You know, that it seemed like a year was forever. Nowadays, a year goes by, you know, you blink your eye and it's, you know, I can't believe it. A year has already passed since I went through all that mess with the apartments last year and had to stay in a spare bedroom of two friends of mine. I mean, that theme seems, you know, like that just happened yesterday. So, you know, when we started seeing ads for this television broadcast, our hearts would flutter. Literally, they would literally start beating faster because we knew Christmas was just around the corner. And Christmas was such a magical time for children and kids our age. And it probably still is today, but there was just, I have never felt about the contemporary Christmas holidays and the holiday season now, the age I am now, that I did as a kid. It's just hard to, you know, when you grow up, it changes. It changes. Now, for a lot of folks, this time of the year is very special because they can see themselves in their children growing up. But, you know, as I was telling you last week, the week before, I never had kids of my own. You know, I was never married. So I don't think that's an experience that didn't get passed on to me. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a very magical time of the year. And I think a lot of that is because for the most part, people are so positive and so excited about the time of the year. I think that all, it all gets rumbled up in the big pot of this world and it helps us all. You know, even though we've got some bad things going on in the world nowadays, I'm not going to get political on this show. But I think that just a lot of positive thinking and a lot of happy thoughts, a lot of, you know, good vibes, as we call them, it has an impact. So this time of the year, I mean, this was just like a roller coaster because it started with Halloween. One of my favorite holidays as a kid growing up, still one of my favorites. You know, I'm like a little kid when it's Halloween. I don't get dressed up as much as I used to. Although, you know, I'm getting to the age where it's like, Jim, you know, by God, you need to start doing that some more. Go to some more Halloween parties and get dressed up. That's on my bucket list to get back into that again, like I had up until, oh, probably to about the age of 30. There's Halloween, and then all of a sudden I turn around and my birthday's right behind that. Because as many of you know, I'm a Thanksgiving baby. So Thanksgiving falls like it did this year on my birthday exact. You know, every 8 years it cycles around. So kids like me who were born between the 23rd and the 28th get to experience that. Now, my grandmother was born on the 28th, so she and I would have that joy of having our birthdays fall on Thanksgiving itself. So we'd always have a big event, and my birthday many times was celebrated on Thanksgiving. It was just easier for the family since we're all getting together anyway. And then you got 2 weeks, and then the Wizard of Oz, and then the magic of Christmas, and that whole, you know, Christmas and New Year's and all of that. And then we had to go back to school. But anyway, so it just made this whole time period from the end of October to the end of December just a very, very magical time of the year. And when CBS would start showing those commercials a couple weeks out, and they would usually show a clip from the movie, and it was usually the clip of Dorothy dancing with the Munchkins on the yellow brick road as she's beginning her quest to go see the Wizard of Oz. And the song, "We're Off to See the Wizard," and all of that. When that commercial hit for the first time, oh my God, my sister and I would just go nuts. We'd go nuts. And it would seem like it would never get there. Those 2 weeks would take forever. And then the movie would start, and this was something that happened virtually every year I watched this movie on television. It would start with the black and white sequences. Now, again, I'm watching the whole thing in black and white because I got a black and white TV, but just to give you a point of reference, because the movie starts in black and white and then goes to color. So in the black and white sequences in Kansas, where Dorothy is having a run-in with Mrs. Gulch, we're going to tell you about all the wonderful people that are in this film. She's the evil old lady that wants to hurt Toto because Toto apparently got into her garden or whatever, and she thinks that he should be destroyed. And of course, as a little kid, the thought of an animal going to the pound and then being put to sleep. And we were well aware of that. You know, there were other TV shows and movies and stuff that dealt with a situation like that, where maybe a family pet was mistakenly picked up by the dog catcher and the countdown to where they had to put the animal under. Scary stuff for a little kid. So you know, we didn't like Mrs. Gulch. Mrs. Gulch, played by a character actress by the name of Margaret Hamilton. And Margaret Hamilton, a very, very popular actress on stage and television and in the films. She would just pick up and show up in all kinds of things. But to us, she was always Elmira Gulch and the Wicked Witch of the West. She was the perfect choice, the way she played them both. And Margaret Hamilton suffered some serious burns during one of the special effects gone awry on this. It was one of the scenes in Munchkinland where the Wicked Witch shows up and then disappears after threatening Dorothy and, I'll get you and your little dog Toto too and all that. And when she finds out that they're going to go see the wizard, of course, in the story, Dorothy doesn't do this, but the tornado that picks up her house lands it in Munchkinland on top of the Wicked Witch of the East, which is the Wicked Witch of the West's sister, and kills her. So the Wicked Witch of the West blames Dorothy for all of that. And again, we all know the story. And I remember right about that time, all of those scenes in Munchkinland and going off to see the wizard. Every time I would think, okay, it's just getting going. It's just getting going. Oh my God, it's really here. It's really here. I'm really watching this movie. Folks, I just can't tell you how much I loved this movie as a kid growing up. And I think a lot of it had to do with the time period that it came out, because it did signify like a big sign that Christmas is right there. But the movie itself for kids and for adults is just a fun, fun movie to watch. It's a great story that we all grew up with. And the adaptation of Frank Baum's novel, The Wizard of Oz. And I confess, I haven't read the book or the other books. And I thought about this the other night when I was watching it. It's like, I need to read those, because they are a little bit different from the movie. And the movie was adapted as a musical, which I think was absolute genius. Directed by Victor Fleming, huge director at that time. And around this time, he was involved with Gone with the Wind and other major motion pictures. And one of the best that they had in Hollywood. Does a great job with this. Now, King Vidor had to come in and finish off some scenes when Fleming was under contract to do Gone with the Wind and had to take off and go do Gone with the Wind. So he didn't get to finish Wizard of Oz. King Vidor doesn't get a credit, but he picked up the slack on some of the Kansas scenes that they shot later on. Because you never shoot a film in order. So here I am sitting there, and it's really starting, and it's really starting, and it's really starting. And then you just wonder, can this moment last forever? Because at the time would come when you get near the end of the film, and you go back to black and white, you go back to Kansas. So you go to Kansas, Munchkinland, back to Kansas, and it gets very sad for a kid. And I found myself experiencing that emotion just the other night watching it again, because it brought back that rush of feelings I had. Was like, oh man, it's getting ready to end. And when it does that, I've got to wait another entire year before I can see this movie. And you had this sort of little war going on emotionally inside of you because you didn't want to see the movie end. It's one of those kind of movies, folks. It could go on forever and you wouldn't mind. You could just keep watching it. You know, nowadays, this is one of those movies, and I haven't done this, but this is easily one of those movies that the kid had a DVD of it or a Blu-ray or whatever, could watch it and turn right around and watch it again and turn around and watch it again. And I'm sure there's kids out there right now that do that. If we'd had that capability when I was growing up, I could have easily done that and never gotten tired of it. But just that feeling, oh man, I got to wait another year before I get to see this movie. So let's talk about a few more of the people that are in that. And then when we get into the timeline, I'll speak about some of the experiences I've had with that too. Okay, we've told you a little bit about Margaret Hamilton, but let's talk about the person who is the actual, I think, face and the person we all associate The Wizard of Oz with, and that's Judy Garland, who plays Dorothy Gale. The whole story centers around Dorothy Gale. And when I think of Judy Garland, and when I thought of Judy Garland all through my life, I always thought of her as Dorothy. Now, Judy Garland, and I'm not going to go much into this because it's been publicized so much and talked about so much. Maybe one of the most tragic actresses that we ever knew during this time period. She had all kinds of demons that she fought. She got addicted to drugs very early on, the age of 15, actually. And I don't think that was more her fault so much as it was the studio. Because this was the kind of thing that went on in the studio system. They would work just ungodly hours. And Judy Garland wrote about this herself, about how at the age of 15, you know, they'd wake her up in the middle of the night, give her uppers, work them like 12, 16 hours, and then they'd take them and give them a downer to get them some sleep, and then 4 hours later, turn right around, do the whole thing again. And so she had an addiction problem early on in life that she had to kick. A year later, she would play in The Wizard of Oz. And one of the things, she was starting to curve out. 16-year-old kid, she's starting to become a woman, and she's supposed to be playing Dorothy, who was supposed to be a little girl. So they had to bind her up pretty tightly. I assume they used an ace bandage or something like that. So they could flatten her chest out and make her look much younger. But folks, I'll tell you, seeing this movie over and over again and looking at some of the actresses that were available during that time period, 1939, I can't think of anybody who could have played this part better than Judy Garland. And people get so emotional seeing that scene where she sings Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which is a song that will always be associated with her. Amazingly, the producers, some of the producers anyway, wanted to take that song out. They didn't want it. They didn't think it worked for the movie. Can you imagine what this movie would be like without that song in there? And then she had many other songs, and then the dance number she did with the three. She was the perfect choice for Dorothy. And it is one of those where, you know, they wanted her for a couple of years. I mean, she was around 14 when the producers that eventually put this film together kept thinking, that's the girl we want to play Dorothy. You know, she was not an unknown. During her early career, she did 10 films with Mickey Rooney. Three of them were with the Andy Hardy series. She and Mickey Rooney became extremely good friends throughout. They were close all the way up to her death. In fact, the family of Judy Garland said that they were going to ask Mickey Rooney to give the eulogy at her funeral in the 60s, and we lost her when she was only 47 years old. And they knew that Mickey would have so much trouble doing that. It would be so emotionally hard for him. They didn't ask him to do that. She had all kinds of illnesses she dealt with. She dealt with deep depression from time to time, had four marriages that were pretty rough. Daughter Liza was born during her marriage to Vincent Minnelli. And then she had two other kids, Lorna and Joey Luft, when she was married to Sid Luft. It was a very contentious marriage that Judy said involved a lot of domestic abuse. Now, her death came suddenly. She'd been married just a few months to her last husband. They were living in London. They had a rental house there. And her husband said that she was in the bathroom. She'd been in there for an awfully long time. Mickey Deans was his name. He was a small-time actor. I don't really remember him. He wasn't in very much, like six or seven projects. But he had to bust the door down in the bathroom, and they found her in there dead. The official coroner's report said an overdose of barbiturates, but not a suicide. And so over the years, a lot of that was implied that she was suicidal, but the coroner was very specific in saying, this was not an apparent suicide at all. She just overdosed on it. She just took a lot of them. I think not with any intention of harming herself. And so at the age of 47, we lost her. She had many comebacks during her career. Of course, I mean, she was one of the hottest commodities in the film world after Wizard of Oz. You know, she'd Meet Me in St. Louis and some others. She danced with Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly in some other movies. Then things sort of went south, and then she reinvented herself again. She had her own television show, nice variety show for about a year and a half, made several appearances, but it was clear to many people that knew her that she was having a problem with alcohol, and the barbiturate sort of went with that as well. And that brought a quick end to her life, which is sad. One of the most talented people that were alive during this time period, and it was just sad that she had so many demons to deal with. But folks, when it comes to playing the part of Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, she was absolutely dead on, perfect. She was somebody you could root for, and we all got behind her in this movie. And that was one of the strengths of this movie. She's leading the other three, the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, Cowardly Lion. They all followed her loyally, and that's right at the heart of the whole film. Judy Garland. It's just tragic that we lost her so young. Would have loved to have seen what else she could have done down the road. Just an amazing, amazing talent. And the true face, I think, of the Wizard of Oz movie. Now, one of the stars of the film is the title star. Who plays the Wizard of Oz? It's played by a great character actor from that time period by the name of Frank Morgan. Frank Morgan was huge in film, Broadway. Not so much TV, because he died before TV really got popular. He died 1 year after this film was made. Died in 1940 from a heart attack. But he plays two characters in this. Everybody in this movie pretty much plays two different characters. And he plays Professor Marvel. He's a guy that Dorothy decides she's going to run away from home. And like I said, Mrs. Gulch has it in for Toto. She shows up at the house in Kansas, the farmhouse in Kansas, with papers from the sheriff saying that they've got to turn Toto over to her so she can turn Toto over to the authorities. And then they take it from there. And we, by what she's saying, we know that that means he's going to be put down. Toto played by a little dog by the name of Terry, by the way, I ought to mention that. And you would see Terry in a lot of films during this time period. Little terrier, little fuzzy terrier. Again, another one of those indelible images that you have in your mind. Great little dog. Although, from what I've read on the production here, it took a lot of takes to get him to do the off to see the wizard type scenes, because it took him forever to start following everybody. I guess Terry had a mind of his own. Like W.C. Fields says, working with dogs. Oh, boy. He's the cutest thing in the world. And so you've got Frank Morgan, who always will be remembered for his role as the Wizard of Oz. This was the highlight of his career, the one he's always going to be remembered for by hundreds of us who love the film and still do. But he also appeared as a number of other characters in the film. And of course, if you're a kid, you spot that, but you don't care. Because not only was he Professor Marvel and the Wizard of Oz himself, which we don't see until the very end of the movie, he's the gatekeeper at the City of Oz. He's also one of the carriage drivers in Oz, and he's a guard at the wizard's door. So he had quite a lot of work to do on this. And it all works. It all works for us. Now let's talk about our three beloved characters that we all know about in The Wizard of Oz. And the first one that Dorothy meets on her way to see the wizard, Ray Bolger, plays the Scarecrow. He also plays one of the farmhands in the Kansas scenes called Hunk. And Ray Bolger was originally cast as the Tin Man. And he was very disappointed with that. He didn't want to play the Tin Man. He was under contract. And somehow he was able to change roles. Because at the time, Buddy Ebsen was cast as the Scarecrow. And so I said, wait a minute, Jim, that's not right. Because we know about Buddy Ebsen and the Tin Man. Well, somehow, Bulger and Ebsen got switched in their roles. So now Ray Bulger is the Scarecrow and Buddy Ebsen is the Tin Man. And it's a legendary story. The Tin Man makeup was made with aluminum dust. And the dust got into Buddy's lungs and caused a very serious breathing illness. Put him in the hospital, and then they found out that he was also allergic to one of the chemicals that was in the makeup. So they had to replace him. And Jack Haley came in as the new Tin Man, and they re-altered the formula for the makeup, and he didn't have any serious problems with it at all. And Jack Haley also played Hickory, who was one of the farmhands in the Kansas scenes. These guys were all good dancers. You know, a lot of them did vaudeville, a lot of stage work and musical comedies and musical theater and that sort of thing. And Jack Haley's son would go on to do a couple of films that I really, really love. That's Entertainment and That's Dancing. That would highlight all of the wonderful MGM musicals that had been made over the years. So the genes, you know, were passed down to his son. And now we've got one of the most lovable characters of the three, the one who played the Cowardly Lion. We all loved him. All of our the King of the Forest, played by Burt Lahr. And again, all of these roles, all these guys we've been talking about, these would be their signature roles. That is just how memorable this movie was to all of us. And Burt Lahr, again, was, you know, big on vaudeville and did a lot of work on Broadway and then ended up doing a lot of television work and a lot of film work as well. These were all character actors we'd see for many, many years. They all lived very long lives. And now Burt Lahr, maybe one that we'd say out of the three didn't die of natural causes. He did have cancer. He also suffered from dementia as well. So he died a little younger than the other two did. But these would be three guys that we would never forget. Never forget as kids. They would live with us forever in these roles from The Wizard of Oz. And that's not to say they didn't have good careers. They had terrific careers. But this would be how they would always be remembered. Now, one of the most popular actresses of the day when this film was made in 1939 was Billie Burke. She had developed an incredible reputation on stage, Broadway, which I know is stage, but I mean, you know, the upper level stage. And then in several films, beautiful lady. And she played the Good Witch of the North, and she was the perfect choice. You know, when you think of the Good Witch of the North, you can hear Billie Burke talking to Dorothy. I said to this day, that's how I visualize the character. And she's sort of like the guardian angel of Dorothy throughout this whole thing. So she was a character we all loved as well. Now, you would see some other people like Charlie Grapewin, Pat Walsh, Clara Brandick. Charlie and Clara played Auntie M and Uncle Henry. Pat Walsh played a character by the name of Nico. All very familiar faces, and they would make some appearances on early television, but a lot of films from the 30s and the 40s. The chemistry in this cast was magnificent. And then you've got the Munchkins, played by the Singer Midgets. Not because they sang, but because the fellow that headed them up, their manager, was named Singer. Now, all of the Munchkin voices, when we see them in Munchkinland, are dubbed, except for two. Jerry Marin is one that developed quite a lot of fame coming out of this film, and he would show up in a lot of films and TV work after this movie came out. Very recognizable. He's one whose voice you'll hear. And the other one who is recognizable, but I couldn't give you his name if you asked me. But he and Jerry were the ones that gave flowers to Dorothy in the carriage when she's getting ready to take off to go see the wizard. Like I said, the chemistry in this film was just unbelievable. Now, there is a very funny movie that came out. I think it was a made-for-TV film years ago called Over the Rainbow. That is all about the Munchkins, the people who played the Munchkins in The Wizard of Oz. I need to go back and watch that again. I remember it was really a fun movie to watch. I'm sure it was a little exaggerated, but it's supposed to be fairly close to the way it was when they made the film. Now, Jack Haley and Ray Bolger and Burt Lahr will tell you that this was not a fun movie to make. It's not to say they didn't like it, but this was a physically very difficult film to make. The little people that played the flying monkeys, the evil flying monkeys of the Wicked Witch of the West, they had a couple of mishaps with them where the wires broke and they fell. Of course, the costuming for the Scarecrow, Tin Man, and Cowardly Lion were brutally, brutally hot. So, I mean, they worked. You know, as Jack Haley said, no, we worked. It wasn't fun, but we worked very, very hard on these. And the shoot took about 3 months altogether for the actor scenes. So we've got the story where, you know, Dorothy she narrowly escaped death from the tornado, which now has all new meaning for me since I went through that myself personally. My house didn't get lifted up and taken off somewhere else, but it just got destroyed from out from underneath me. But she wakes up, and in the movie, when she's waking up in Munchkin Land and she opens the door, now it's all in color. The first time I saw that was in 1969, when we finally had a color TV, and I could not wait to see this movie so I could just see that sequence, and it absolutely blew my mind. And it was a nice touch. So you got the sepia tones for the Kansas scenes, and then boom, all color for Oz and Munchkin Land and all of that. It was a very, very nice touch. I don't know if Victor Fleming made that decision or the producers, but whoever made that call, it was the right call. It could have been the cinematographer. So Dorothy, you know, has had her run-in with the Wicked Witch of the West, so now we've got good versus evil, and Dorothy just wants to get back to Kansas. You know, I'm just trying to get home. And she's told, you know, the Wizard of Oz could probably help you out with that. He's quite a guy. And so she takes off with Toto on her own, and then they meet up with the Scarecrow. She helps him down off the pole he's hanging from, and he just wants a brain. All he's ever wanted in life was a brain. And of course, now we get into the different songs. Each one of them has their own song. And he asks Dorothy, he says, can I go with you? You know, and she says, yeah, go with me to see the Wizard of Oz. Maybe he can help you too. And then on the way, they meet the Tin Woodman, and he's stuck out in the middle of a field. It apparently rained on him, and he rusted. But his oil can is nearby, and they're able to oil him up, and he moves. And I'll tell you what, the dance sequence for that with Jack Haley is magnificent. All of them are, not to take away from any of them, but that one was, because he's in, like, you know, if you remember the old robots from movies back then, he was sort of in a costume like that, you know, made out of pipes and things like that, all metal. He does a heck of a job. He really does a heck of a job with that. And he wants a heart. That's all he's ever wanted, was a heart. So he goes along with them too. They say, come on. And then they bump into the Cowardly Lion, who at first they think is, you know, they're scared of, until he confronts Dorothy one-on-one and she slaps him in the nose and he turns into a coward. Well, that doesn't turn him into a coward, but he always was one. And it's a nice scene. It's a nice, nice scene where, you know, he gets all emotional and crying and, you know, I just need courage. You know, I'm a lion and I don't have courage. And you know, you think that the wizard could help me too. And of course, they all go along their way on the Yellow Brick Road towards the City of Oz. Now, there's another rumor that went around that if you watch closely, at the time that the movie came out and before widescreen TVs came out, one of the scenes where they're taking off, you know, doing, you know, we're off to see the wizard, and the camera pans out long to show him going down the road, that you see somebody in the background. There was rumor for years, and again, folks, there's no truth to this rumor, that a stagehand killed himself there, hung himself on the set. Well, I'm sure you've heard this already, but there's absolutely no truth to that at all. I still have many film books that talk about this. So then it was reported, well, no, it wasn't somebody killing himself. It was just a stagehand that got in the way when they were shooting in the distance, and you can see him trying to duck it for cover. And that's not true either. What it is was a huge bird, a big swan. And they had these swans. They had all kinds of exotic animals that they wanted to portray in Oz. It was sort of in the distance, in the foliage, and it's spreading its wings. And this has been confirmed, and of course we can do that now with the digital copies of the movie, and we can really zoom in and see what it is. But so if you've ever heard that story and somebody says, oh, yeah, yeah, somebody killed themselves, you know, the curse of the Wizard of Oz. No, there's no truth to that at all. No, didn't happen. Like I said, Margaret Hamilton got hurt. She had second and third degree burns from the effect of the smoke and flame effect of her disappearance from Munchkinland. It held up shooting her stuff for a couple of weeks for her to recover. But yeah, no, you know, nobody killed themselves on the set. So they make it to Oz. They get there. You don't really see Oz proper. You see more of like a projected image of his head. And he says, yeah, I'm going to help you. I mean, at first, you think he's a really mean guy. And he's not going to help him at all. And he finally says, no, I'm going to help you. But you got to do one thing for me. You got to prove that you're worthy of the things I'm going to do for you. You got to bring me back the broomstick of the Wicked Witch of the West. Like, wow. Oh, my God. So, well, you know, Dorothy wants to go home. And, you know, Scarecrow wants his brains. And Tin Man his heart. And, of course, the Lion wants his courage. So they get all outfitted, and it, you know, a lot of funny sight gags and stuff. You know, one of them has a butterfly net and a big broom and things they're going to do to go after the Wicked Witch, and they go try to find them. Now, I want to mention one scene that I haven't talked about yet, and probably some of you are saying, hey, what about the poppy seeds or the poppies? Just before they get to the City of Oz, and I'll tell you, folks, the matte work in this film is wonderful. They really went out of time. And all of this film was shot on sound stages. They did a magnificent, even with the tornado and stuff in Kansas, all shot on sound stages. Kudos to the special effects guys. And again, I want to pay credit to the cinematographer, Harold Rawson, who did a phenomenal job on it. And the score of the film by Herbert Stothart. The songs were written by Harold Arlen. He wrote the music, and E.Y. Yip Harburg wrote the lyrics for all the songs. They all work beautifully together. Everything works in this film, folks. It really does. But yeah, back to the scene there. Okay, I'm not trying to dodge it. In the movie that you will see, they're running their final leg towards Oz. They can see it in the distance. They're trying to run to get to it very quickly. Takes them through this poppy field, and the Wicked Witch of the West does something where the poppies puts them to sleep. It sort of drugs them. Now, originally, the scene was different. They were going into the poppy field, and they were going to have dancing monkeys. And they all start doing the jitterbug, what they call the jitterbug scene. And that's what puts them to sleep, because they get all tired out, and it puts them in a position where the Wicked Witch can get them. But that just didn't work out logistically, and it stretched the film out too much. So they trimmed it down so it makes it look like that it's the poppies themselves, something that she did to the poppies, that puts them to sleep. And then Glinda makes it snow, and it's the snow that counteracts the drug or gas or whatever it is that the Wicked Witch of the West did and wakes them up in time so they can get to Oz before the Wicked Witch can get them. Well, anyway, now we'll skip back to where we left off here. They're on their way after the witch, and the witch sends out the flying monkeys after them. They attack, and they take them all off to the castle of the Wicked Witch of the West. And they're all being threatened here and there. But the one, as a kid, that was the scariest, because there's some scary stuff in here, was the Wicked Witch didn't care about the Scarecrow or the Tin Man or the Cowardly Lion. She didn't care about any of them. She wanted Dorothy because Dorothy was wearing the ruby slippers that belonged to her sister. Not Dorothy's sister, but the Wicked Witch of the East, sister of the Wicked Witch of the West. And she knew they had a power. She didn't know what it was that they did, but she knew she needed it. You know, she wanted it. Plus, they were her sisters. She's got Dorothy locked up. There's a big hourglass. I'll never forget it. Now we've got the Cowardly Lion, and we've got the Tin Woodman, and the Scarecrow. You know, the monkeys left them. You know, the Scarecrow was all torn apart and all of that. And Toto escaped from the Wicked Witch's castle, and he goes to get him to show him where Dorothy is, where the Wicked Witch's castle is, so they can rescue her. But this scene, you know, even when I knew what was coming, she says, you know, you'll be finished by the time this hourglass is empty. You know, you flip the hourglass over and the little beads fall down. By the time they all fall down, you'll be done. I mean, she doesn't say you're going to die I'm going to kill you or whatever. We don't know what's going to happen, how it's going to happen. Okay, so when the beads all run out, she just dropped dead or what? But that was the scary part, because that's all the time they had to rescue her and get her out of that room that she's locked in. Some real tension there for us as kids. And even, like I said, even after we'd seen it, it still elicited that. Well, maybe they won't make it this time, you know. But again, it's like we say about monster movies and horror films. The more you leave to the imagination, the better it is. So our minds were racing on that. I couldn't imagine what was going to happen to her if time ran out. But they get there in time, and we all know the story. The Wicked Witch sets her broom on fire to set the Scarecrow on fire. Dorothy grabs a bucket of water that's nearby, old fire for fires, throws it, and the water gets on the witch, and guess what? Like with the Day of the Triffids and other movies where water kills the big monster, water kills the Wicked Witch of the West, and it dissolves her. She melts right there in front of them, and they're able to grab her broomstick and take it back to the wizard. And we all know the story from here on out. The wizard turns out to be a humbug. He's a fake. He's a phony. All of his power is created by machines and things. He has no mystical abilities. But this is the fun part of the movie and the real message of the film, that the Scarecrow, Tin Woodsman, and the Cowardly Lion, everything that they ever wanted was already inside of themselves. They just needed a catalyst to help them realize it. And so the Scarecrow gets his brains. He already had them. He just didn't know how they were there. And the Woodsman gets his heart. But as the wizard tells him, you showed a lot of heart in everything that you did. So it was already there. You just had to tap into it. And the same with the Cowardly Lion. Courage was always there. As we look at what you did for this whole enterprise, all the obstacles you guys all went through to help Dorothy, to save Dorothy, you had it within you all along. And then Glinda shows up. Well, actually, something happens first. The wizard says, I was brought here, much like you, Dorothy, from a weather event. I was in a balloon. You know, that's what I did. I appeared in county fairs and things with my hot air balloon. And it got caught up in a wind current. The next thing I know, I'm landing here in Oz. He says, I am going to take you back home to Kansas. He says, I'm from the Midwest myself. And through a series of unfortunate circumstances, the balloon takes off with the wizard. And Dorothy, she's chasing after Toto because Toto had jumped out to go after a cat or something. And the balloon goes off without her. And now she's, oh, man, here we go. And, of course, the three of them, you know, the Tin Man and the Scarecrow and the Cowardly Lion says, you can stay with us. But she says, I really want to go home. You know, Auntie Em and Uncle Henry, they could be worried about me. You know, and I just, you know, I ran away mad because they wouldn't stand up to Mrs. Gulch, who wanted to, you know, do away with Toto. And so that's why we ran away. And Glinda shows up then. And they explain their situation to her. And she says, Dorothy, you've always had the ability to go home at any time. The ruby slippers. And again, click three times, say there's no place like home. And there you go. And of course, after Dorothy does that, she wakes up and everybody's there. They'd been down in the storm cellar during this, well, it was a cyclone, or the same thing as a tornado, you know. Hunk and Zeke and Hickory are all there. Annie M, Uncle Henry are there. And then Professor Marvel shows up and says, yeah, I was a little worried about the young gal. Hope she was okay. I heard she had quite a run-in because she took a bad knock when the window blew in from the tornado. And the big message is delivered at the end of the movie where Dorothy, you know, in the camera says, you know, no matter what I wanted and all of the excitement that's out there and stuff, there's no place like home. And then there's a lot of little kids sitting around the TV set saying, oh, man, we got to wait another year to see this movie again. And that's where a lot of the emotion comes from. And even today, thinking about it, you know, thinking about it, and the other night watching it, thinking about, you know, in the different parts of the movie, the emotions that I experienced during this movie. Yeah, I could feel it. This movie had quite an impact on me. I would have to say, out of all of the movies that affected me as a kid growing up, as monster movies or any other kind of movies, this one may be the one that had the most impact on me and the longest lasting impact on me. It's a wonderful film, folks. And if you have young children, whether they're your grandchildren or your children or whatever, make this a Christmas event. You know, everybody has their Christmas rituals and routines, their holiday rituals for whatever holiday that you celebrate. Make this one of them. I'm going to start doing it, even though I don't have any kids or anything. But I just, you know, it's just to help make the season a little more magical. Because it definitely did that for me as a kid growing up. The Wizard of Oz from 1939. My favorite Christmas movie of all time. Even though it was technically not a Christmas movie. But it became that way because CBS ran it between Thanksgiving and Christmas for years and years and years. Hey, folks, next week we will be celebrating a brand new year. We'll be saying goodbye to 2023, which, you know, overall hasn't been that bad of a year. There's been some good things happening here. I did get a place to live. That was nice. A lot happening. And 2024, I think, is going to be even better. And we hope it is for you, too. So, folks, we hope you are having a good Christmas day. And we hope you have a terrific week. And Mark Maddox and I will see you for a very special show in our last holiday offering of 2023 on New Year's Day. Have a great week, folks. We will see you then.
It's a new era for Doctor Who.
Life depends on change and renewal.
And the crew from Earth Station Who podcast will continue to guide you through the past, present, and future of the franchise.
Though not necessarily in that order.
Join us for some wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey talk of stories new and old.
Listen to Earth Station Who wherever you access your podcasts. We're a proud member of the ESO Network.
We're all stories in the end.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.